Good morning. This is Commissioner Susan Wiefald. It's 10 a.m. on Wednesday, September 19th of 2007, and the commission is gathered for its regular meeting. We're here in the commission hearing room, State Capitol 12th floor in Bismarck, North Dakota. And with me are my fellow commissioners, and I'll first ask them if they have any welcoming comments that they would like to make. Commissioner Clark?
Just good morning. Welcome.
And Commissioner Kramer?
Good morning. Welcome. I move passage of items in the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Now we'll go to the regular agenda. SW1 is for a discussion item only. We will not be voting on this. It's for information for the public. This has to do with the Northern States Power Company September 2007 fuel cost adjustment. And for the month of September, the average residential customer using 750 kilowatt hours, their cost will increase by $1.11 for bills rendered in the month of September. And the cost of NSP's electric cost of fuel for the month of September will be 3.186 cents per kilowatt hour. We've already acted on the ones for MDU and Otter Tail, so this is the only one for this month. Next, we'll go to SW2. I move the commission award a contract to Gary Morlock Construction, Inc. in the amount of $60,286 for construction services at the Havelock abandoned mine land site in Hettinger County.
Second.
On August the 19th, the commission authorized procurement of construction services for several maintenance projects this fall at several locations, including the Havelock AML site in Hettinger County. We use competitive sealed bidding procedures, and three bids were received in response to the solicitation, and the bids were publicly opened on September 10th, and the low bid came from Gary Morlock Construction of Bismarck in the amount of $60,286. And the commission issued an intent to award this bid on September 11th, subject to a seven-day appeal period. And that seven-day appeal period has now expired, and Morlock meets all the state requirements in order to be able to do this work. We have had no bidders appeal this intent, and so now at this time, the commission is awarding the contract to Gary Morlock Construction for this Havelock AML construction site. This is considered a small contract by commission standards. This is work that we do in the fall after we've mainly completed our main projects, and so it's good to get this work done this fall.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye. SW3, I move the commission acknowledge the letter of intent, shorten the one-year waiting period between filing a letter of intent and a citing application to one day, and assess a filing fee of $100,000 in case number PU07169, based on Electric Power Cooperative's proposed Williston-Tioga 230 kV electric transmission line in Williams County, North Dakota.
Second.
The commission is always pleased to receive a letter of intent regarding transmission. And in this case, this letter of intent comes from Basin Electric Cooperative, and they're planning to build a 230 kV transmission line from the Western Area Power Administration's Williston substation near Williston, North Dakota, to the existing Tioga substation near Tioga, North Dakota, which is owned by Montana Dakota Utilities. Now, this facility that is being proposed would be approximately 50 miles in length. That's a significant amount of transmission to be built in this state. And they say that the transmission line is needed to increase the load-serving capacity and reliability of the interconnected transmission system in northwestern North Dakota, due primarily to expanding oil development and related increased electrical power usage in this area. They have told us in their letter of intent that under schedules giving consideration to state and federal regulation that construction, they're hoping, would begin in 2009 with the line being placed into operation in early 2010. And they say, we intend to begin right-of-way acquisition in July of 2008 to meet our online schedule of early 2010. They anticipate that the cost of the facility would be approximately $20,500,000, and that's why the commission is assessing a filing fee of $100,000 in this case. And under additional information that they're giving to us about this, the considerable oil development, they say, considerable oil development activity in northwestern North Dakota is causing an accelerated growth in requirements for electric power. Montreal Williams Electric Cooperative, a member of Upper Missouri Generation and Transmission Cooperative, and will not be able to serve forecasted load growth due to existing high voltage transmission limitations, and therefore additional high voltage transmission facilities are needed in this area to allow service to existing loads and the anticipated load growth. As you can see, this probably relates in very definite terms to the oil boom in that region. Basin Electric hereby requests the commission shorten the one-year waiting period between filing a letter of intent and the filing of the application for a certificate of corridor compatibility, and that's why we are in this case, we are shortening the one-year waiting period to one day. That means that any time after today or tomorrow, I guess that would be after tomorrow, that Basin could file its application to the commission in this matter, and then the commission would have approximately 6 months to make a determination about the setting of that line. That's why it's so important that we people become aware of this project now, and so that they're able to ask questions of the commission or a Basin Electric Power Cooperative about this project, because we have a map of this, and I'm not aware of whether this 230 kV line will be following an existing line. It doesn't say make any mention of that in the notice of intent. So it could be a greenfield project where there is not an existing transmission line at the present time. And as you can see, there's quite a large corridor that's being considered. I'm holding up a map here that Basin has provided to us between Williston and going northeast to Tioga. And so the towns of Springbrook, Epping, Ray, and Tioga and Williston are, of course, in that general area. And so citizens who are in that area may want to contact the commission or Basin for additional information.
We've talked about this before, and we'll talk about it again. It really is a remarkable time of investment in the energy industry in North Dakota. The estimate here preliminarily is about a $20 million line, something like that. We've probably had in the last year and a half, more siting applications than I probably saw in my first 4 years combined here on the commission, and was a trend for a number of years, and there just was not a lot of investment in the energy industry. The other thing that I think is interesting and is illustrated by this particular application is the interdependency of the energy industry on each other and really utilities on each other. I mean, here you're talking about oil development dependent upon transmission lines, electric transmission lines getting built to the oil fields. Water, which is a utility we don't regulate, but is regulated by some municipalities and in some states by the states themselves. Water and energy, electricity, are very dependent on each other. Even telecommunications, telecom is dependent on electricity, and as grids become smarter, the telecom world and the electricity world merge together in some ways. So it's a very interdependent relationship that utilities have on each other, and this particular application, I think, illustrates that.
Well, and this application practically mirrors the previous one, the letter of intent, the same company with the Belfield Durham proposed transmission line. This one, I notice, looking at the map, is a little more, has the potential to be a little more direct because there aren't federal lands between the two points. But at any rate, yeah, it's an interesting time.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
That concludes the items in my agenda. Commissioner Kramer.
Thank you. KC1, I move the commission approve Northern States Power Company's cost of gas adjustment for September 2007, case number PU07643.
Second.
It seems the absence of hurricanes is good news again this fall. NSP is decreasing their cost of gas adjustment by 84.5 cents per decatherm compared to last month, which will change the residential customer cost of a gas adjustment from 654 to 569.78 per decatherm, which should lower the cost of gas in the bill by about $1.60 compared to last month and $4.30 lower than September of last year. In addition to the commodity cost of gas being down significantly, there was a decrease in pipeline costs. There's the annual true-up factor, which is also to the benefit of the consumer in this particular cycle. So good news for NSP gas customers.
And we can maybe anticipate that NSP gas customers will see even a lower bill next month, because as you'll see from the next cost of gas adjustment that's on the agenda for MDU for the month of October, They found that their cost of gas decreased even further in the month of October. So we hope this is a trend that will continue through the winter time.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
KC2. I move the commission approve Montana Dakota Utilities Company's propane cost of gas adjustment for October 2007, case number PU 07651.
Second.
Unfortunately, MDU is increasing its propane cost of gas adjustment by $1.09.8 per decatherm compared to last month, which will change the cost of gas adjustment from $11.15 to $12.25 per decatherm for October.
I already have my summary.
Yeah, you filled. That's a good idea. For typical residential customers in October, the cost of propane in the bill will be about $7.69 higher than last month and $2.07 higher than October of last year.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Propane is tied a little more closely to the price of oil, in case anyone's wondering. KC3. I move the commission approve Montana Dakota Utilities Company's natural gas cost of gas adjustment for October 2007, case number PU 07652.
Second.
MDU is decreasing its cost of gas charge by $1.51.6 per decatherm, changing the cost of gas from $5.20 per decatherm to $3.69 per decatherm. For a typical October customer, the cost of gas in the bill will be about $10.61 lower than last month and $17.07 lower than October of last year. Again, the largest reason for this is the decrease in the commodity cost of gas, which is due to high storage and, again, no hurricane activity. That has affected at least minimal hurricane activity. Pipeline rates are down a little bit as well. And again, we are in that annual over under recovery surcharge time of October, which is a new cycle for MDU. But that also is in favor of the consumer this go round. So
I want to show you the chart. Okay. This is the lowest cost of gas that we're seeing in October for MDU customers than we've seen since the beginning of 2003. So this is a significant decrease, as you can see, since 2006, when we had a peak in the cost of gas for MDU customers of around $11 or more than $11 a decatherm. We're now back down to under $4 a decatherm, which is very, very significant for customers across the region. As I said, we can only hope that this continues now through the winter months. We just don't know from looking at this chart whether it's going to start back up again or not, but for this 1 month, it's the lowest price that we've had since 2003.
Right, and not just in October. I mean, the lowest price,
period. That's right, period. They can see that from the chart. Yeah. They can see that, yeah.
I mean, one of the positive signs, especially for MDU customers, is storage is very high. Mm-hmm. And MDU is a system which has a large amount of storage. So they've been able to fill up at lower prices than they have in recent years, which means during those peak winter months, they'll draw out of storage at a lower cost than we've had before. That's going to help mitigate prices relative to other years, probably regardless. I mean, I suppose the spot price could get high enough where maybe it ends up being a wash. But the signs are positive. Now, NSP customers, XL customers in the eastern part of the state, XL is a little bit more market dependent. They don't have as much storage as MDU. They don't sit in quite as favorable a geologic formation as MDU. But
they get their gas from other sources.
That's
as
right.
Well.
It'll help in the eastern part of the state too. They're just not able to capture as much of the storage mitigation.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
KC4, I move the commission present the 2007 State Reclamation Award to the Falkirk Mining Company for outstanding work at the Falkirk Mine.
Second.
For the past several years, well, for many years, we've presented an award at the Lignite Energy Council's annual meeting. A few years ago, we started a process of presenting an award even in the absence of a self-nomination. So our reclamation staff looks throughout the year in their work with the mining companies and looking for excellence and looking for outstanding efforts and achievements to be awarded. This year they're suggesting Falkirk, and I agree, it's Falkirk has been involved in and interestingly, this is not your typical reclamation project so much. It's not about a particular lake or a particular piece of property that was reclaimed in any excellent fashion, but rather because of its cooperation with the NRCS, the Natural Resources Conservation Service, in a pilot project for mapping reclaimed soils. Recent changes, regulatory changes in the farm program are requiring much more data, much more information related to soils, soil types, and a lot more surveys are required, a lot more field studies. Well, in North Dakota, of course, we have over 50,000 acres of reclaimed land, and so completing a soil survey of reclaimed areas is a pretty significant task, to say the least. And so in consultation with our staff and the mining companies, the NRCS developed a protocol for mapping reclaimed lands. And one thing that we have is a lot of data and a lot of information gathered in various ways and a lot of history there. Well, the Falkirk mine was selected to do this pilot project by NRCS and by our reclamation staff, and they were more than willing to provide the NRCS with requested information, ready access to reclaimed lands, which is very significant. Falkirk has a good deal of cropland, which, you know, in some of the other mines, they don't have quite as large a percentage of their land that's cropland, so they were a good choice. But by combining the information provided by Falkirk with a GIS system, the NRCS was able to generate a landscape-based soils map of the reclaimed areas at the Falkirk mine, and all of this really above and beyond the call that they'd have to meet. So we appreciate their cooperation and want to acknowledge that with this year's reclamation award that will be presented October 4th, but you all have to be sworn to secrecy now because it's a big surprise. Anyway.
I apologize, but I didn't get the second.
Second.
Was there a second?
I'm sure there was.
Okay, well, that's what I'm thinking. All in favor.
Aye.
Thanks. Oh, goodness. KC5. I move the commission adopt the order and issue a corridor certificate and route permit in Enbridge Pipelines, North Dakota, LLC's application to reroute in Williams County approximately 1,600 feet of the 8-inch crude petroleum pipeline existing in Williams and McKenzie County, North Dakota, case number PU07600.
Second.
We've been dealing a lot with pipeline sightings lately, but this one's a little bit unusual. It's only 1,600 feet. It's 8 inches, and it is. We're dealing with it because in 1983, when Enbridge put their 8-inch pipeline in October of 1983, when we permitted it, the Public Service Commission at the time permitted it. After that, a rural elementary school was built right next to the pipeline with the playground built right over the top of the pipeline, which is an interesting irony in cultures that we're dealing with right now. But at any rate, we've, as you know, recently permitted another pipeline for Enbridge that is paralleling this existing pipeline. The new pipeline is a 10-inch pipeline, but of course, rather than going through the playground, they are routing it around the school, and using this opportunity to reroute the existing pipeline as well, paralleling the new pipeline around the school. And they are, as my understanding, in that point of construction where they're close to that area now, so we're glad that we could deal with this. There was a notice of opportunity for hearing and comments, and none were received. The school has signed off on the new route because, quite honestly, the new route is a little bit inside of the 500-foot avoidance area and thus requires requires the agreement of the the property owners, in this case the school district. So at any rate, everything is in order. There were a couple of suggested changes when we received the permit and the application and the plan, and those changes were met and agreed to. So our staff feels comfortable going ahead without a hearing on this. And I agree.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 That ends the items of my portfolio.
Commissioner Clark.
Just one item in my portfolio, TC1. I move the commission adopt the order granting or regarding universal service certification for rural eligible telecommunications carriers, case number PU07244.
Second.
By commission order in 2002, the rural carriers in the state that receive federal universal service dollars are allowed to come to the commission to certify by affidavit that they will, in the coming year, spend federal universal service dollars only on those things that they are supposed to be spending them on. We then forward this information to the FCC. The FCC requires these affidavits to be filed. Companies do also have the option, if they wish, to file directly with the FCC. This particular order lists all of the companies that have certified to us by affidavit that they'll be complying with that particular federal rule. There is one, apparently, that has not yet gotten their paperwork in. It's Roberts County and RC, which is a sister telephone company. They serve a very small number of lines in the southeast part of the state. But we haven't received that yet, so I don't know if they're certifying directly or if they've got till October 1, so we may be having a special meeting. But this includes the rest.
Just before this meeting, I talked to our staff because I was curious about how new rules that the commission has put in place for criteria that the USF companies need to provide to the commission, how that was being used in this order. And I talked to Pat Vaughn, and he said that, yes, we have received new data from the companies as a result of rules on eligible telecommunications carriers. However, this year, that information is being used as baseline data, and so we're not making a determination as to whether or not the companies meet USF certification until next year, when we're able to compare their baseline data with the information that they supply next year. For example, one of the things that they had to provide to us this year was they had to tell us how much money they're receiving this year and how they plan to use the funds. And then next year we'll be able to go back to see how much money they actually did receive and how they actually did use the funds that they're receiving for USF. Some of that information has come under trade secret application, and the commission still has not held a working – we have not yet had a meeting to determine whether that information will be classified as trade secret or not. There is a lot of interesting information in there. I've been reading those applications, and so I anticipate that the commission will be handling that in the next meeting or in the near future to make a determination about that.
The rulemaking that we recently passed, of course, is a little bit different than this. This is under the separate section, but nonetheless, in future years, both will be required. We could also tell them just to go to the FCC and certify. But our rulemaking would still stand. It's a kind of a separate issue.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That ends the items of my portfolio.
All right. And so now the commission is holding an informal hearing this afternoon. We, of course, will follow this meeting with an administrative meeting, and we understand there's some people here who have perhaps some issues that they're interested in on that admin meeting. Commissioner Clark, do you want to share it all? You were down in South Dakota at their telecommunications conference yesterday. Anything you'd like to share about that?
It was a good conference, similar to the one that we held here in Bismarck in 2005, got me thinking that, you know, perhaps we should start of doing this on a rotating basis. I mean, it seems to work well. We both have similar size staffs and deal with similar challenges in our two states with regard to the rollout of wireless services, so maybe we should sort of get into more of a rotation where we each do this every other year in our respective states. Good conference, well attended, probably 250 people at the Sioux Falls Convention Center. I moderated a panel on universal service and talked about all those thorny USF issues, which we've all been dealing with for some time now. But, good things are happening as far as the amount of investment that is going on in rural America. Still a long ways to go to get full coverage, but it's a lot of money.
Really,
to put up towers.
The real question is, how was your service once you crossed the border? Did you have good cell service?
Much better in North Dakota.
I thought so. Yeah.
Okay, and then we just want to note that we do have the Enbridge Pipeline hearings that will be held October 2nd, 2007, up in Cavalier. The commission will be going to those meetings. All right. Okay, are there any questions?
On the admin, could I get a copy of the petroleum marketer's letter, please?
Sure.
Yep.
Also, the letter from the law firm, I presume they're asking for a delay in the pre-prudence determination. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's correct.
I'll email it. Right.
And we'll be glad to give you a copy of that letter. And we're going to be discussing that today on our admin agenda.
Now, please refresh my memory. The Basin is also doing the Bellfield Rain Project.
Yes,
right?
That's correct.
Do you know if they're involved, if they're using the...
I'm wondering that myself.
We don't know. I mean, I don't know personally.
I don't know either. That thought crossed my mind, too.
I'm sorry.
That question crossed my mind, too. As Susan was reading, I was thinking, I don't remember reading about it in the paper, but that they were using the... pipe or the authority, the transmission authority?
Yes.
Yeah, I have not heard anything about
it. I mean, are they? Do you know?
I don't know.
Okay. I don't know.
Okay. The, excuse me. Could you just encapsulate again, the difference between Montana, Dakota, and XL Energy as far as natural gas storage
with regard to storage,
well,
pricing.
I'll try. MDU has what I would call a hedging advantage in that they have tremendous capacity for storage because of the geological formations in their area.
About 40%.
They have large cavernous areas in the western part of the United States, from where they get their Rocky Mountain natural gas, and. And so they have these huge storage areas, which allows them to store low-cost gas in the spring and summer, and then, of course, roll it out then or use it in the winter. XL does not have that luxury. Their storage is pretty well confined to pipelines and gathering stations, and so they're more subject to spot market prices. Now, there are other hedging tools that they can use, but we don't have those right now, or we don't allow those, as far as I know, that we allow any financial hedging tools. So that's the basic difference, is just the MDU's capacity for storage.
And sometimes, storage, when you put natural gas into storage, the prices are high, and sometimes NSP could come out better if the prices are low through the winter and they're more dependent on the current price of natural gas, they could come out just fine with that. So it's just a matter of one strategy of providing natural gas versus another.
We did have discussions with XL a number of years ago, and I'm struggling to recall exactly what the outcome of those were, but it was with regard to financial hedging, and I think we gave them some ability to... I'm looking over at Dave Cedarquist for a nod. I think we gave them... I don't know how much of that particular market mechanism they implemented, but we gave them a little bit more latitude to do some hedging because they don't have the opportunities that MDU does.
About the petroleum marketer's letter, is there can you tell me what sort of things you could do to respond to it?
Well, that's
what sort of
that's what we're going to talk
yeah,
about.
That's what we're going to talk
we're going
about.
To talk about. We haven't talked okay. about it yet.
What is the? I mean, is it fair to say, or do you know, if oil development in northwestern North Dakota has been slowed down or delayed because of a lack of electric power?
I've never heard that it has been.
I think that they're anticipating, I think they're anticipating oil development in the region, and so that is part of the reason for the new transmission line.
The reason I ask is that, I'm aware of there's a natural gas plant in southwestern North Dakota that really isn't operating as it normally would because of electric power supply problems, and that's one of the reasons why.
The Bellfield. Terrain, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you know, you mentioned cell service, do you know if cell service is improving in oil development areas because of...
In oil development areas?
Yeah.
Actually, I think the answer to that is yes. And the reason I say that is I recently received, you recall Flaxton was one of the communities
that's
that
what we, I was just thinking.
was one of the communities that we had worked with earlier this year. I think it was in January that we went up there. And I recently received a note from kind of the lead organizer of that particular event and Burke County Job Development Authority folks as well, indicating that one of the companies was seriously looking at permitting a site in the Flaxton area. And one of the reasons, in addition to the attention that they had received earlier, was there's increased oil activity in the area. So that's one example. Now, whether you can extrapolate that to all of western North Dakota, I don't know. But I suspect it's something that the cell phone companies are taking a look at just by independent verification through that particular site.
I have a question regarding all the prudence cases. Minnesota Commerce Commission apparently has put their latest order on hold because of some developments with two of the partners in Big Stone 2. Is that going to affect your determination? Because you were looking at the Commerce decision.
Right. As you'll note from the letter that we received from the attorney, and I think that was just given to you.
Oh, that was the other letter.
I'm sorry, you didn't receive a copy of that letter.
I just forwarded it to Dale. I can forward it to you as well.
But anyway, we received a letter, and in that letter they asked us this. They said, accordingly, they're talking about last week Great River Energy and Southern Minnesota Municipal Agency, two of the project co-owners, that they informed us that they intend to withdraw from the project as equity owners on September 21st of 2007. Okay, so accordingly, applicants, that's Otter Tail and MDU, respectfully request that the Commission suspend the procedural schedule and further proceedings, including the hearing scheduled for October 1st, 2007, and defer further deliberations on the merits in these cases for the present time. While the matter is suspended, applicants intend to develop a recommendation on how best to conduct further proceedings. Applicants expect to have a recommendation for the Commission to consider no later than October 4th of 2007. We have this on our admin agenda to discuss.
Dave, to the degree that you're asking about the Minnesota settlement itself, the Department of Commerce had enacted, I don't know that what they're doing there in particular affects our decision on the prudency cases. I think it is fair to say, though, that the backing out of the two large Minnesota partners, in fact, I think the largest single ownership interest was Great River Energy in the project, that could potentially have a lot of impact on the prudency cases here in North Dakota. I noticed in the newspaper today, out of Fargo, there was some indication that they would be scaling back the size of the plant to 500 megawatts. Now, we'll receive that information at some point as well. Now, if you have a large-scale back of the project like that, you're not dealing with the same power plant that we had a hearing about earlier, and so that could have a tremendous impact on the proceeding here. Remember that one of the rationales that has been given on the record is that by joining together with all these other Minnesota companies, they're able to build a larger plant, which by the scale of things makes it more efficient. I mean, we'll need to take a good hard look at that.
A little what we say.
It's all on the record. There's nothing wrong with saying any of that.
I'm curious. I mean, obviously, there was a lot of competition from North Dakota power generation interests for an alternative to the Big Stone 2. And the reason, at least the stated reason, that it didn't go forward, the North Dakota options, is because Big Stone 2 was judged to be the most economical, the most feasible, et cetera. Are these assumptions now, do these assumptions still hold if
I think we have to. I think that you're asking questions that are a part of we have a case before us, and I just don't think it's wise for us to comment.
You can answer that question.
There's no problem with that question.
That's not a problem.
I mean, that's exactly the question that we need to be asking as we get into the case, is does the scale change, or is it the same project? I mean, they're all very legitimate questions that need to be answered on the record, I feel, before we can proceed.
And frankly, one of the things I was thinking of is to what extent you try to deep six the Big Stone project in hopes that they would select a North Dakota option.
Well, that's not our job.
I understand.
And whosever job it is hasn't done anything about it to this point, so I don't know.
Anything else? All right. We'll close this portion of the meeting then. Thank you.